All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. May 1st, 2024. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. I hope it's fantastic wherever you are at. I am up in the new studio. I'm feeling it. It's feeling good. Settling in. Got up this morning, went for a nice walk. The weather's nice, so there's no excuses why not to walk. Maybe, an, I don't know, mile and a half or something. Just to, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm doing different things, right? I used to, I remember when I used to do a lot of running, I used to have a coffee before I ran. I used to have to look at my phone. This morning, I just got up. I didn't look at my phone. I didn't have any coffee. I just grabbed my stick. I have a walking stick. And I put on my shoes, and I just started walking. And I just wanted to get outside and just think and reflect and, you know, cherish, right, this time free of screens and people, and just think about what my meditation is, a conversation with God, a conversation with peace, identifying scary things that may come up in the day-to-day, recognizing that I am feeling better. Right, I've actually been feeling a lot better, settling in. Whenever I did the podcast last, yesterday was the day I had. Yesterday was Tuesday. Got up early, went and grabbed my dad's truck, and just got the rest of the stuff out of the salon. It was some art. I had this big, you know, one of these big like Pollock looking pieces of art with like splattered paint. And you know, I really liked the piece. It was great, but I couldn't take it. I had to throw it in the trash. And another piece of art I threw in the trash too. I actually put it on the curb and threw a foot on it and snapped it in half, and then so it fit in the dumpster because, you know, I can't take it. I have to let it go. I apologize. It was a great piece of art, but it was great where it was at on the wall in the salon. There was nowhere else it was going to go. It couldn't go in my house. It was obnoxious, so that was sort of hanging me up. And so I got up early, got the truck, loaded the rest of the stuff in there, got it all out of there. And I left the key, and I left the mailbox key, and I sent him a text. I said, the place is clean, right? I left the keys. Here's my address for my deposit check. And I didn't hear anything back. I'm not proud of myself. Actually, I feel like everything that I did or have done was absolutely normal, right? This is absolutely, you know, I can tend to feel like I need an extra padding on my back because, you know, I cleaned out the salon, right? I did everything I was supposed to. I didn't break anything, right? I don't have, I actually feel like I am due my deposit back. And, you know, that feels good. And part of me is like, look at me, right? Actually, I shouldn't even say that because I don't even feel that way. I feel like I've done this long enough that I don't feel like that. But I can tell you in the past, I've been like, look at me. I got everything cleared out, right? I've done what I was supposed to do. And like I've said many times, man, it takes a lot of work to be normal. And so it's really good. What's more important for me right now is just cleaning up these facets of things, right? These different little things that are going on in my life, because they seem to be sort of creating some anxiety, and they're like just little opportunities to project weird shit. And so I finally got that cleaned up. I did send the people a text, and then, you know, I didn't hear from them all day. And I texted them last night, and I said, did you get this text, right? I mean, I sent you a text. Did you get it? Could you, you know, respond? A thumbs up or something would be nice. And finally they wrote back and they said, oh yeah, we were just checking out the space. What are we supposed to do with this? What are we supposed to do with the refrigerator and the washer and dryer and the shampoo bowls and all this stuff that you left here? And I was like, that. And see, the funny thing is they have no idea. They have no idea what I left. Are they? You know, when I signed that lease, and if you've ever signed a lease, it was a kind of an interesting situation because there was the building that I was in had previously had a salon in it, And so the way they had the setup was downstairs was the salon hair, you know, where you did hair. And then you go up this flight of stairs up into the spa, right? The spa area. Well, that place closed down. They didn't even stay open a year. And so when I took over the lease, it was sort of in shambles. And it was half together. It was, you know, a lot of crap in there. It was just a big mess. And part of the deal was, listen, you can rent this place, but you got to get it fixed up. And so I went in there and I fixed the place up and got it all, you know, in working order. But some of the things that were there were shampoo bowls, right? Where you, I think everybody knows when you go get your hair cut or something, they, you know, they shampoo you. There were these two shampoo bowls that were there. I wouldn't have chosen them, but that's what was there. There was some, there was a washer and dryer, a refrigerator, a water heater and stuff like that. And when I signed the deal, this, you know, this is part of, in the lease, it said, this is all part of the building, right? You just don't get to take this in the end. And so when he texted me yesterday, he's like, what are we supposed to do with this washer and dryer, these old appliances and these antique shampoo bowls and stuff? And I was like, hey man, when I came in and took over this lease, all that stuff was there. So that was not mine to take. Oh, that's a little live. Brothers Unaware, great album, right? Mental Jewelry, I think that's their first album, great song, great band. But yeah, you know, I've been feeling like, I'm just really grateful that sobriety, recovery, whatever it is that I am doing here has allowed me to be part of this experiment, right? This 14-year experiment, right? It was always, and I could tell you some of the things that I've done in my recovery that were an experiment because I was sober didn't always work out. Marriage was one of them, right? That seems to be a topic that has come up lately with a lot of people that I know and friends is that, you know, and I see it happening. I see people repeating the same sort of mistakes that I made back in the day, which is, let's get sober and let's catch up with our whole entire life, right? Or let's, you know, we come out of something and we jump right into something because for whatever reason, whether it's to feel better about ourselves or to quiet down the fear of being alone or whatever it is. But, you know, these things that sort of pop up in early recovery and they seem like they're a great idea because I'm recovered, right? I am not drinking. I'm not doing all these things that I used to do. So let's catch up. And it's just, you know, and plenty of warnings, plenty of people that suggest don't do it, right? Don't make any crazy big decisions early on in the first year because it's not going to work out. And you're like, how can that be? How can that be? Well, a lot of stuff worked out while I was even under the influence. So I'm sober now. I'm better. Why can't this work out? And it's just because we are not ready, right? Because this isn't just a drinking disease. In fact, this has nothing to do with drinking, right? All the part of stuff that I talk about is when we are not drinking, right? I don't have a podcast for drinkers. Right? There is no podcast that a bunch of people drunk sit around and listen to. I don't think so. There may be drunk people that listen to this podcast. Maybe. I don't know. If you are, put it down, right? But I know, unfortunately, what it'll take. It'll take stitches. It'll take, a court case. It'll take, bankruptcy. It'll take waking up to an empty house like I did. It just doesn't happen because we feel like it. Because we don't feel anymore. We are under the influence of a devil. And as crazy as that sounds, it is absolutely true. And so, but this salon and opening when I opened the salon and the 14 years was an experiment. Can I do this? And, I had actually, it'd be one thing if I'd gotten sober and opened the salon in the first year. I don't think that would have, I know it wouldn't have worked out because what the actual experiment took place was, let's get sober, let's go to Rutgers, right? Let's get a degree in turf management, and this is what we love, right? We're back. This is a career I can get my hands around. I love getting up at 5:30 in the morning and cutting grass and working in the heat and dirt and filth and sweat and being treated like shit, no offense. But, I love this job, right? And actually, I did sort of like that. I did like working on the golf course. I did like getting up early. I did like working in the heat. But that's the problem. I'm a blue-collar guy, right? But ego, myself, my selfishness, my ego, my pride wanted me to be better. Wanted me to be something that I wasn't, right? And that was going to be a superintendent. And I just wasn't cut out for it. Just didn't want it. And I couldn't see that really the reality was my ego wanted me to do it. I don't know. See, I don't know the pattern. I don't know how that works out. If ego wants me to do it because it knows that I'm going to fail. And that if I fail, maybe I will come crawling back to the bottle. I'm not sure it's that in depth or that smart. Who knows? But people warn me, don't do it. Don't have any new relationships, no big jobs, no big decisions in the first year. And I did all of that. And what would end up happening is I would hate that career. I would hate that relationship. And I would hate being sober eventually, right? Because I wasn't prepared. I see a buddy of mine going through it right now. And I really feel bad because he is, in his mind, he is killing it. And on the outside, he is killing it. And I know on the inside that, unfortunately, he is going to probably drink again. What, Tom? Don't say that. That's what they said to him at the meeting on Monday. This guy said, the guy, when he was leaving the rehab, he said, just so you know, you're probably going to relapse. And when he shared that at the meeting, everybody went, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that. It's a fact. It's a fucking fact that you line up all the people. When I came into this program, March 31st, 1997, and I started shaking hands. Good morning. How are you? Good morning. How are you? Thank you for having me. It's good to meet you. The list of people that were there that day, if they haven't died from old age, are probably back out drinking. There is a small, teeny weeny little handful of people that are still around from those early days. I don't know when we came back from the pandemic and back to meetings, but I came into that meeting shaking hands. I was back. It'd been a couple years of not going to meetings and seeing people and getting back. I remember that first meeting with that mask on, and I had tears rolling down my face because I had been living 2 years of selfishness, right? And it was the humility to get back to a meeting was pouring out of me in tears. And I just felt like, oh my God, I've missed this so much. And all those people, good to see you, man. Good to see you. Wait, great to be back. A handful of those people are gone. And that was just a couple years. I mean, even in the past year of my recovery, I've shaken hands with people. How are you doing? Good to see you. Welcome. You don't ever have to drink again. You never have to feel that way again. All you need to do is come to these meetings and work this 12-step program. Half those people are gone. So the reality that that guy told that guy the other day, by the way, you're probably going to relapse, is a fact. And the fact that all those guys in there were like, I can't believe they said that. That guy should be fired. No, it's a fact. The amount of work in suffering and serenity and surrendering and honesty that a person has to do to just barely get a chance to get sober is huge. It's very, very tough. I don't even know why I'm sober, to be honest. I am not the guy that has the onions, right, the balls to dig in and work through a program to get on the other side. I've never been that guy. I don't know why I have made it. I'm a people pleaser, right? I people pleased my way through this program for a long time, right? I people pleased my parents. I people pleased my friends. I people pleased people at meetings. Look at me, I'm back. This feels good. You recognize it, right? It's a lot of people pleasing. But that day came. Hey, man, what about drinking? Look how good you've done. Didn't even expect it. Next thing you know, I'm drinking again. I think my personal opinion is I wouldn't be here if I hadn't drank. I don't know if that's even possible, right? I guess what I'm saying is I had to pick up that drink. I had to listen to that voice. I had to lose it, everything. I was telling my wife, you know, when I came to recovery, I had nothing. I had zero. All it took was to pull the damn alcohol out of my hand, and all of a sudden, I was capable of doing all sorts of shit, and I went for it, right? I came in here with nothing, a broken-down car, a broken-down job, a broken-down house, right? Got a job, got a career, got a girlfriend. I remember my first girlfriend when I got sober. She was a beautiful girl, and she was too good for me, and I knew it, and I kept telling myself, she is not going to stay with you. I was tortured. I mean, I'd gone from drinking a bottle of vodka every night to this beautiful blonde girl who had an amazing career, had aspirations for the future, and she wanted to do things and retire, and she was killing it. And I'm like, and she liked me. And I was like, oh my God, this chick cannot be liking me, right? I'm saying, yes, I like you, right? I remember I bought some clothes, right? I got some better shoes. I had a new car. I was working, right? I was working, but I wasn't, I was nowhere prepared. And all day I'd be like, she's going to break up with me. She doesn't want to be with me. How could she be with me? Totally torturing myself because I, like my buddy Matt used to say, the program told me, let us love you until you can learn to love yourself. And I did not love myself. I hated myself. I hated me as much as that girl I thought should hate me, right? I'm like, what a piece of shit I am. How could this chick even like me? Torturing myself. They say, don't get in any big relationships in the first year. That's why. We are not capable of being loved, right? I can't love myself. So I remember just like tortured. And then finally she broke up with me. I knew it. I knew that was going to happen, right? And then I grabbed onto my first wife, right? That night, I was like, oh my God, my heart is broken. I'm not prepared for this sort of thing. This is where I would turn to a drink. But what I did is I turned to my next favorite thing, right? Women. Grabbed onto this girl, and I was with my buddy Rick, and we were at this. We had gone to this dinner. My buddy Rick asked me to go to a friend of ours dinner. And I said, I'd go. I was dating a girl. But we were sort of, it was ending. I knew it, right? And, but we had gone to this dinner, and then we went out to go dancing with these people, and I was just hanging out with my buddy Rick, and we ran into the girl I was dating, and she was on a date. And I just remember I was devastated, and I grabbed onto this other girl and basically just sort of took her hostage, unfortunately, right? And it just, you know, I look back at it now and I'm like, what was going on? But I wasn't prepared. Hold on a second here. Anyway, I was not prepared. And it just made a series of self-centered, selfish decisions from that point on. And, you know, I look back at it now and I am grateful. You know, we have a son and I've talked about this and he's awesome. But, you know, it's just a weird path. And I'm surprised I'm even still sober, to be honest with you, right? I mean, I know what it takes and I know what I do, but the path that I went was not a good positive one. It was really set up for disaster. And I'm just grateful that I've hung on, right? Just grateful. But in today, you know, what it comes down to is just, you know, being at peace, right? And I shared a little bit about this the other day. I haven't been staying in a healthy place lately. I've been doing a lot of projecting, you know, and that was what I was focusing on today with my walk, is that that's why I didn't take my phone. That's why I didn't listen to any music. I needed to just have a conversation with God and start trying to, you know, some other let me finish that thought. Start trying to recognize and just tell God, listen, this is what I've been doing. I've been projecting and I've been creating fear, and I haven't been, you know, holding the hand of God, right? I've sort of just been off the reservation, living in self and not living a very pleasant existence. And I'm tired of it, right? I'm telling on myself, I'm done. I don't want to do that anymore. I have done everything, you know, closing the salon was a big thing. But you know, what I'm grateful for is that I tried to do it correctly. And I got this text message from them last night. Finally, they recognized, yeah, we got it. We have some questions. And, you know, obviously and I told him, listen, everything that's there was there. That was none of my stuff. And he's like, well, my son is going to have some questions for you. And I was like, okay, whatever. I know this is, and now, you know, another in fear comes in because I want to get my deposit back. I don't need it, but I'd like to get it back. I did. I tried to do everything correctly so that I could have my deposit back. So I'd like to get it back. But I've been just living in this kind of weird place. And so I've sort of shut the door on that yesterday. But the other thing, a new door has opened up for me, which is a financial one. When, you know, at the end of this adventure, the experiment, the salon experiment, I was the only employee. I've always been the only employee. Well, I shouldn't say that. We used to have other employees that were on payroll, but in the end, I just started renting chairs. You were sort of in charge of your own issues, and I ran myself as just an employee. So I would send over my data, and then the payroll company would deduct the taxes that I needed to take out and then put the payroll check into my bank account. And then at the end of the year, they did my taxes and yada, yada, yada. Well, now they're not going to do it anymore because I'm not a business. Now I'm just a 1099. Now I'm just a private contract, whatever you would consider it. And they're like, we can't do your taxes, your payroll anymore because you're not a business. And I'm like, well, can't you just do the same thing but not be a business? She's like, no. So now I have to figure out how I'm going to handle that, because I get very stressed out about taxes. I am very concerned. And then I was talking to a friend of mine. She's like, you don't even have to really worry about it. Just, you know, do whatever. I'm like, part of me is like, okay, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do whatever. But that is not going to work out. So I've got to have a better plan than do whatever. But now that's creating a little fear, right? Luckily, I don't spend too much money in my life. I'm pretty tight. And I think we're all aware of how much expensive everything is. So we are really trying to be minding our P's and Q's with our finances. But I don't know. That's another thing but I'll do it, right? I'm going to do it. I'll have to call somebody. I'll have to reach out to somebody smarter than me about these certain topics and see what the solution is. Maybe I can just put money aside. You know, some people pay in cash. You know, don't tell anybody. But they pay in cash. We can put that under the mattress. It's just, oh, man. All this new stuff. But the good thing is today, luckily, I'm sober. And I can, you know, do the next right thing. And when you do the next right thing, you don't have a lot of dumb shit that ends up popping up in your life, which is funny, right? Because for a long time, I didn't do the next right thing. I did the next wrong thing. And then I was scratching my head when, you know, I had to pay the consequences for my stupidity. Like, how come that happened, right? And, you know, the program teaches us to be accountable and recognize, gives us an opportunity to take a look at all the dumb shit we've done, right? Look at all the shit we've done. Let's try to take note of that and not do it again, right? You know, like I've said before, if we're going to make a new line in the sand, if we're going to start our life over, right, if we're going to drive that car across the state, let's get it in its best shape. And, you know, that's what the steps are nice. You get to take a hard look at ourselves, right, and clean that stuff up. And it's really very important. So when people say, maybe you should not pay taxes and just don't claim anything, I know better because I can look back at my past and see where that would have probably backfired in my life. And that's good. All right, let me read the Daily Reflections. I'm excited about having this Tracy girl on my podcast on the 13th. I'm excited about talking with her about recovery. And yeah, that'll be cool. Let's see, Daily Reflections. Daily Reflections, let's see. Healing heart and mind. Healing heart and mind. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Yep, step five, right? That was such a big deal. That's one of the magical steps, right? There, magic happens with that step. We don't actually realize it. But we definitely, it's easy to see when this step hasn't taken place, right? When we actually share our darkest secrets, admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Yeah, that's so big. 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 55. Since it is true that God comes to me through people, I can see that by keeping people at a distance, I also keep God at a distance. See, I'm gonna read that over. But this is one of the things that I'm sort of like tripping out on right here. It says, since it is true that God comes to me through people. How does God come to me through people? And what I think, and this is sort of, I sort of shared this the other day. It's like, what character defects, what shortcomings do I have to adjust, right, to be able to have a relationship with a person, right? I mean, I know a lot, I've met a lot of people, like, you know, my buddy that's, I've been sort of going back and forth with, right? What is it that I have to do to allow that relationship, right? I have to, you know, lower the expectations, I guess, of him, right? And lower, I don't know, be honest, I guess, about what I'm doing so that I can tolerate what he's saying to me, I guess, right? Because in the end, you know, it says, since it is true that God comes to me through people, I can see that by keeping people at a distance, I keep God at a distance. So what? It's about, you know, I'm not being honest with about myself, that doesn't allow the people to be into my world. Like I have to, it's still fear, right? I have to remove the fear to allow the people. I don't know. This is one of those things that's just, you know, now that I've sort of come to this conclusion that for me, a relationship with God is a place or to experience God, right? It's not a relationship with God. It is a byproduct of living good that to me ends up being God. So it's to have a relationship with peace, right? I don't know. Anyway, let me stop, Tom. But I'm finding this stuff very interesting because, you know, someone was saying how God speaks through people to me or to us. And I'm like, how does that, I have never heard, right, that. But I have heard when someone will speak to me, like my buddy that has been speaking to me, that aggravates me so much that, you know, I don't know if it's fear or whatever it is, but makes me not want to be part of that. Right. And then, but if I take a hard look at myself and try to find the honesty and to remove the fear and to be able to have the relationship to say, hey, I understand, you know, that's fine. And I still love you. Right. You say what you say. I've got my side of the street clean. And so I don't have fear. So it doesn't matter. I'm available to listen. Is that a relationship with God? I think so. But just very fascinated by this whole God stuff and this peace and this how much fear has consumed my life. So, all right, let me just read it again. I won't analyze it. Since it is true that God comes to me through people, I can see that by keeping people at a distance, I also keep God at a distance. So what makes me keep people at a distance? Fear? Yeah, okay. God is nearer to me than I think, and I can experience him by loving people and allowing people to love me. But I can neither love nor be loved if I allow my secrets to get in the way. My fear, right? Fear, no God. I said that. That wasn't written. Sorry. It is a side of myself that I refuse to look at that rules me. I must be willing to look at the dark side in order to heal my mind and heart, because that is the road to freedom. I must walk into the darkness to find the light and walk into the fear to find peace. Yes, by revealing my secrets and thereby ridding myself of guilt, I can actually change my thinking by altering my thinking. I can change myself. My thoughts create my future. What I will be tomorrow is determined by what I think today. That's right. You know, that is it. That's it right there. I think that's, you know, I guess it's going to be a little, few minutes long, but, you know, that is today where I really am about, right? This place of no fear. What creates fear? Secrets, bad behavior that we don't tell, bad thinking, right? I know that my behavior is good. Do I still have ill thinking and inappropriate thoughts? Of course. I can't help it, right? I wish, you know, I'll see situations, I'm like, man, I'd love to do that. Or I'd love to, you know, whatever the situation is. But then I think it through. I'm like, man, would that be worth it? No, it would not. And, but just like the thought of it and just sort of thinking about what the repercussions would be, fear immediately comes running in, right? And then you're just sort of out there by yourself on an island with nobody to help you. And that's just my first thought, right? Because of course, you know, all the stuff that we learn and all the program stuff comes rushing in and says, oh my God, that would be a mistake. Let's think it through. Why would you want to do that? All of a sudden you have fear. Now you've let go of the hand of God. This would have to be, you'd have to make an amend. It's just, oof, right? Ugh, we've been programmed. We don't do that. I still wish I could make my first thought better. I'm not sure it's possible. I'm not sure my first thought is always bad. I just don't think it's always good for my situation in my life, right? Running off to Vegas, right? It's not appropriate for my lifestyle. But man, if someone is living a life and it's time to start doing new things in their life and being adventurous, maybe not Vegas, but maybe a trip to the Grand Canyon to ride in a raft down the river, I don't know, something wild and crazy, wouldn't be appropriate for my world, but it might be appropriate for somebody. So I can't say everything's bad, but you know, I think at the end of the day you want to close your eyes with peace, right? You don't want to have a lot of fear and anxiety from whatever it is we've done. So that's a great read. I am blown away about the revelation of how much fear has taken over my life and how much it's run my life and how it's gotten me to this point. And now all I can do is recognize it and be like, that is absolutely crazy. So anyway, I hope everyone has a great day. Thanks for letting me share, and we'll catch up later. Bye. And if I